Okay, so I'm going to go to the back of the parsha and we'll work our way forward afterwards. So the incident that we have at the end of the parsha is the story of the Mekalel. The man born from an Egyptian father and a Jewish mother, and he's the one who blasphemed Hashem's name. This happened during the very first year in the Midbar. The mother of the man was Shlomit Bas Divri, the only Jewish woman who ever lived with an Egyptian. Not willingly, but on the mistaken assumption that this was her husband. But it says, unfortunately, she put herself into this predicament. Shlomit Bas Divri, you might say, could be translated as the lady who said hello and was excessively talkative. And that's what we're told. She had a talkative conduct. She was, it says, too conspicuous and not sufficiently modest. And she would actually go out, greet everyone, strangers. She would say hello and smile. Shlomis, the Medrash says that she addressed all men with shalom to you, shalom to all, while they were an Egyptian overseer, one who was responsible for a crew of Jewish slave workers, came to her home to summon her husband to sing sat. It's time to go to work. She gave him a smile, greeted him nicely, and somehow it says, this encouraged him to return after the husband left and fulfill his vile wishes. It says that Shlomis had not been protected and was not protected by heaven as other women, all other women in Klal Yisroel were, because it said her conduct somehow had proven to be unworthy of Siyata Dishmaya. And they're quoting here, Vayikra Rabba. Shlomis' husband was coming back, and he noticed the overseer leaving his house, and he realized what he had done. So now we had a problem. The perpetrator did not want people to know that he was a rapist. And he therefore made it his business to get rid of the husband of Shlomis. And he began striking him on the work site with the type of blows that were evident that would kill him. Who comes on the scene? The famous story, Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Egyptian taskmaster beating a Jew, and Moshe said, this is definitely an injustice, and it can't be allowed to stand, and in order to cause a Kiddush Hashem, he said, B'shem HaMafayresh, and the Egyptian was no more. Now, we're told that for some reason, Shlomis became pregnant by the Egyptian, and the son had the father's nature. He was provocative, and in the desert, he started to make fun of the things Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching. Somebody mute, please. Okay. Right? What he did was, okay, Moshe had taught Klal Yisroel, which is in our parsha, the halachos of the lechem aponim, the 12 loaves that were put on the shulchan every Shabbos, explaining how the mitzvah was to bake it erev Shabbos. It would sit on the shulchan for a full week, be replaced by new bread the following Shabbos, and the bread taken off was given to the Kohanim. And we know that the bread stayed as piping hot from the second it came out of the oven until the time it was given to the Kohanim. But this character said, how can this be? How is it proper that in the Mikdash, the area where the Arayin is, that the king's palace gets served with bread that gets stale? Who would ever serve a monarch with 9-day-old bread? You're giving God stale bread? He presumably had been told about the nace that occurred, but he didn't believe it. The Malbim, it says, and again we have these problems in the Torah at other times, said this incident occurred even before the giving of the Torah, so there was no Mishkan. Although they were being taught this halacha, and presumably they were being taught what was going to happen, and he was a kofer, he didn't believe it. The other Mefarshim say no, it happened while the nace was happening, and he denied that it happened at all. It says that this individual decided he was going to pitch his tent outside of the general camp area. He wanted to live, and he lived with the Temeyim, those who had been required to leave the general area until they became Tahar again. And for a while, he was content. However, a day came, and he decided, you know what? My mother, presumably, is from the shevet done, or maybe the one, the Jewish man who had married his mother was from Dan. And he said, I'm going to claim my portion there. And Nadav says that when he made this move to move into the Dan area, someone said to him, right? You don't belong here. The only people who can be in this area have to have fathers from Dan. He says, well, I certainly do. So they said, okay, let's do what Jewish people do. Let's go to a Beis Din and find out what your lineage is. When the members of Beis Din heard the facts of the situation, they ruled that he had no right to claim a spot in Dan. All of the Shvatim were camped according to the order handed down by Yaakov Avinu, and they had to be able to trace their lineage to a male member of the Shevet. The Egyptian son was irate, and he said, who was my father? And they said, you know, it's the famous story. Your father was the Egyptian that Moshe killed. And he said, Moshe killed him? How could this happen? And he was told, all Moshe had to do was mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu's four-letter Shem HaMeforesh, and the Russia died. And when he heard this, it says, the son knew how to enunciate that name, and again, how, I don't know. And he actually did. He cursed the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he blasphemed it. Once he did this, he was taken to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu whether or not this was a capital offense. Until Hashem would answer, he put the man into imprisonment. We're told that there were four cases where Moshe needed help to decide the halacha. And two of them involved capital punishment. This one, the blasphemer, and the mekoshesh, the one who gathered sticks on Shabbos. And the other two were either money or personal matter. The first one was, right, when the Jews who were Tomei, asked, why should we be prohibited? Why should we be forestalled from bringing the Korban Pesach? Because we had buried Meisei Mitzvah, and they were given the halacha of Korban Pesach, and they were given the halacha of Pesach Sheni, which is this Friday. The exact same phraseology, Lama Nigara, why should we be made to miss out on a mitzvah, was what Solovtsov's daughter said. And they wanted a share in the land. Solovtsov had no male descendants. And Moshe, again, asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and was told, Cain benoit Sloikhoit Divrice, yes, they're correct, that where there are only surviving daughters, they inherit the father. But in this case, because we were going to do the first division of Eretz Yisroel, they had to marry their cousins, members from their Shevet, which they did. And we're told that in any of these cases, four times in his life, Moshe Rabbeinu had no embarrassment whatsoever to say to the people, I don't know the halacha. There are things I don't know. I have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this was to be the model for all those who teach in Klal Yisroel that you don't fake it. What you don't know, you admit. And you admit you've got to find out. In Moshe's case, he found out from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in today's cases, there are many times Rabbanim say, I want to ask somebody who's a bigger expert in this area. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe the answer to what was happening. And Hashem said he's required to be stoned and that this would be the halacha forever. Any Yid who pronounces the four-letter name and blasphemous is Chayiv Misa, being killed by stoning. Hashem gave Moshe additional rules with regards to halachas that involve capital punishment and with respect to compensation for damages. And these halachas, it says, complement the ones that were originally taught in Mishpatim. It says, B'nai Yisroel executed justice on the blasphemer. They stoned him. They brought him to the place assigned by Beis Din, which was a high spot, and he was pushed down. And if he died by the fall, that would be enough. And then they cast a stone at him. He was then hung very shortly and taken down at nightfall. And the Ramban points out, this was not an execution of an individual out of an act of revenge, because he had gotten into an argument with other Jews. This was only to fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commandment that these types of Rishonim cannot exist and have to be taken out. There's two special halachas that are taught when, if God forbid, someone blasphemes the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anyone who hears this has to tear Kriya. It says there was Rav Sheka, who was the king of Usher's general, and he was a Jewish apikoyres. He was sent to Yerushalayim to try to persuade the Jewish king to surrender to the Usher, people of Usher. Together with other delegates, Rav Sheka put himself in an area in front of the wall of Yerushalayim, and he began to blaspheme the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he said, in Hebrew, to all who could hear him, don't you trust King Chizkiyahu's assurances that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save you and that your city is going to be saved from the hands of Asher? Has any other god of any nation that we've come up against saved his people from the hand of the king of Asher? The gods of Hamas, Arpad, Sepharvayim, Hainan Eva, and any other countries, their gods were useless. The king of Asher took them out. Chizkiyahu had told the people not to answer, and they didn't, right? But when they heard that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being blasphemed in the company of these idols, they tore their garments. And they then went to the king, who apparently hadn't heard this. And when the king, Chizkiyahu, heard what happened, he too tore Korea. Chizkiyahu covered himself the same way Mordechai did, with sackcloth. And he went to the Beis HaMikdash to daven. He sent his emissaries to Yeshayahu, the prophet, to hear what Hashem said. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, do not be afraid of the blasphemies of the king of Asher through his general. Hashem says he is going to receive a message that Tirhana, the king of Cush, came up to fight his land, which apparently was a greater danger than anything where he was. He will leave Yerushalayim and return to his land, and there I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will cause him to fall by the sword. When a blasphemer was judged by the Beis Din, a special halacha applied. At the final stage of the court case, everyone left the area, except for the judges who had to render a verdict, and the witnesses who could give testimony that the person presumably, right, did this act. And unfortunately, they say, the halacha was that they would have to repeat the actual words the blasphemer said. Why would they do it? Because until Beis Din hears what actually happened, they can't render halacha, especially halacha to kill somebody.
So hold on.
They were told to do it. It's not an Avera. But when the judges of Beis Din heard it, they immediately tore Korea, right? And the following procedure occurred. One witness and every judge did smicha, resting their hands on the criminal's head. This symbolically implied you brought the death sentence on your head. What's going to happen to you is totally your fault. It says they excused themselves, as it were, for having been required to repeat such words and hearing such a terrible annunciation curse and saying, you caused all this, right? When the blasphemer was finally executed, right? They said that is when the, call it the stain of the Chilul Hashem is erased, right? Because we don't see here that there's any, you know, other requirements for some sort of tshuva. The blame rests solely with the perpetrator, which is interesting. I think I remember that when this type of testimony is given in the court, one aide says the exact words, what this guy said, and I think the Gemara says, Yake Yoisi es Yoisi. What means is, you curse HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name using his own name. Okay? So the first aide says, I heard this terrible statement. And the second aide doesn't have to repeat it, I believe. He says, Kach Shomati, I heard the exact same thing. We're not going to overdo it. Right? Which is different. Like, I don't know that in other cases, right?
All right, so if you had one aide said, I saw this guy kill someone, can another aide say...
I don't think so. I think they both have to give testimony. I believe that this is the only exception where a second witness can say, I heard that, in order to avoid a greater Chilul Hashem. So... this is, like I say, one of the unfortunate incidents that the Torah teaches us. And the Kaddish Baruch Hu in the Torah didn't shy away from difficult subjects in many respects. And that's it. Okay. Have a great day. We will meet again, Bezras Hashem, tomorrow.